I had a great aunt who lived to the age of 97. She was a nurse, actually a medical missionary, who served 30-some years in India. But my aunt was also, how do I say it, judgmental. She was not always sensitive to others' feelings, or in the words that she used. A story I was told was that when she was home once on furlough, not having seen my dad, her nephew, in 7 years, the first thing she says to my dad when she sees him is, "I thought you said you're going to lose weight." Now, was my dad overweight? Yes. Did my dad make claims that he was going to lose weight and not fall through with it? Yes. But sometimes people can be insensitive in what they say and what they do. We continue in our series on Joseph from the book of Genesis. Just to catch us up to speed, Joseph is the favorite son of his father Jacob. Jacob had given Joseph that famous coat or robe, and the other sons are green with envy. After a series of events, they decide to kill Joseph. Instead of killing him right there and then, Reuben, the oldest brother, proposes to put him down in a cistern. He has plans to come back later and rescue Joseph. But in the meantime, Joseph lingers down inside the pit. He's got no food. We're told that the cistern was empty with no water. He has been stripped of his robe. He may have been naked. And that's where we left off last time we were in Genesis. What will happen next? I'm glad you asked. My passage is Genesis 37, 25 through 36, if you'd like to be turning there. Genesis 37, 25 through 36. Now, if I were to ask you to give me an example of evil, what or even who would you describe? You might say that evil is what Hitler did, or what a murderer does, or something demonic and dark like that. And all that is true. But there's another kind of evil that I'm getting at, one that is more insidious. It's those other actions that accompany evil acts that just make it even worse. Let me give you a couple examples. Let's say you have an alcoholic who sells his kids' toys so that he will have money for his booze. While the father being a drunk is a big problem, the fact that he would sell his kids' toys to fund his own addiction makes the situation all the worse. Or how about that adult child who takes advantage of her mother who has dementia, all for the purpose of financial gain? While greed is definitely a problem, manipulating the parent in such a condition makes it all the worse. When studying our text, what you find is the brothers showing insensitivity. Sure, wanting to murder then sell their brother as a slave is bad enough, but there are other things as well that just make it worse. With that said, and remembering that Joseph is down in a pit at the start of our passage, let's start now with verse 25. As they sat down to eat their meal, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels were loaded with spices, balm, myrrh, and they're on their way to take them down to Egypt. All right. Now, right away, we see insensitivity. While their brother is stripped of his robe, he's stuck down in a cistern with no food or water. What do his brothers do? They eat. There are times where you might say or hear someone say, "How can you eat at a time like this?" You just get word that a loved one has passed. Do you say, "Oh, that's just bad. I think I'm going to go to the all-you-can-eat buffet at the Golden Corral." That just doesn't make sense. And this is what their brothers do while Joseph languishes down in the pit. Of course, the irony is that while they eat here, when Joseph is stuck in a pit without food, a day will come when Joseph will feed them when they need food. Chapter 43, verses 33 to 34. But to make the present story even worse, and I quoted this to you last time we were in Genesis, but in 42:21, chapter 42, verse 21, the brothers confess how Joseph was in distress here in our story when he pleaded for his life. And I don't know how far the cistern was from where the brothers ate, but could it be that they could even hear his cries for help while they enjoyed a meal? Do you see now how these other, even what we might call little things, just make it worse? Back in verse 20, the story they planned to tell about what happened to Joseph would be that a wild beast ate him. but we're seeing who the real beasts are. Now, we are not told in this verse, but we know from the prior verses that they are around Dothan, and that is important to the story because running through or maybe around Dothan, near Dothan, is a trade route to Egypt. And why is Egypt important to the story? Because that is where God will raise up Joseph to be second in command, whereby he will save life. And this will fulfill the prophetic dreams Joseph was given. Now, in our verse, while the brothers ate, lo and behold, some Ishmaelites come by who just happened to be headed down to Egypt. Now, I'm being funny, but interesting. They're going down to Egypt. That's where Joseph is prophesied that he will be, or that's where God is going to take Joseph. Now, the circumstances are not going to be pleasant for Joseph, but what I want you to see is that God is working it all out. And that's true with whatever you're dealing with today. Do you believe that? Whatever you got going on today, God is working it all out. Verse 26. Judah said to his brothers, "What will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood?" Now, we'll talk about Judah more next week, Lord willing, but for now, he is one of the brothers. The word for brother or brothers is used 21 times in this chapter. It's as if our author seems to be emphasizing the gravity of the situation here. You know, this is not just some hit and run. This is evil to one's own brother. And so you have Judah, you know, perhaps in between bites, starts to think about what they will all gain by killing their brother. Verse 27. "Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood." His brothers agreed. Perhaps Judah reasoned that by selling Joseph, they are not actually committing murder, and they can make money on the side. Now, in Hebrew, you pronounce Judah as Yehuda. You take that over to the Greek, and you get Eudas. And in English, we say Judas. So you have a Judas here in our story that wants to betray one of his own for money. Does that sound anything like the New Testament? But Judah's reasoning here doesn't make sense. He argues they shouldn't kill Joseph because he is their flesh and blood brother. But apparently selling your flesh and blood brother to slave traders, that's okay. But I see here another example of insensitivity. Since the brothers will go along with Judah's plan, what we have here is mistreating another for financial gain. You might think of such places as Planned Parenthood and abortion doctors who make money off of murder. It's just sad. It's sickening. Verse 28. So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. Now, in the original Hebrew, there is ambiguity here. The translation I'm using attributes Joseph being pulled up from out of the cistern by his brothers, which probably was true. It was the brothers who did it, but the Hebrew just says they pulled Joseph up. Who are the they? The nearest antecedent would be the Midianite merchants. But then you ask, where did the Midianites come from? I thought it was the Ishmaelites. Are the Midianites and the Ishmaelites two different groups? Is one a subset of the other? Are they the same group, but the terms Ishmaelite and Midianite are being used interchangeably? And the ambiguity of the verse might be a deliberate way to say that no matter who did what, as serious as it is, God's working through it all to get Joseph to Egypt. You see how this verse ends? It ends with Egypt. Why is Egypt important? Because that's where Joseph's prophetic dreams will come true. Let me give you another thought here. Remember that Joseph had been pleading for his life down in the pit? When they bring him up out of the pit, did Joseph think his brothers were setting him free? And while his life was spared, he wasn't exactly being set free. He was being sold into slavery. Verse 29. When Reuben returned to the cistern and saw that Joseph was not there, he tore his clothes. He went back to his brothers and said, "The boy isn't there. Where can I turn now?" Now, remember that Reuben had plans to secretly come back and rescue Joseph from the cistern. But when he does return, Joseph is not there. Is Reuben thinking that they did end up killing Joseph after all? But a good observation arises here. Even our good intentions cannot change the work of God. Let me explain. It's good to want to do good. It's good to do good. But God might still have other plans than our good intentions. Reuben may have had good intentions in rescuing Joseph, though he may have been trying to get back into his father's good graces. But regardless, God's will was not for Reuben to rescue Joseph, but for Joseph to make it to Egypt to save lives. Verse 31. Then they got Joseph's robe, slaughtered a goat, and dipped the robe in the blood. Now remember, they had to cover their tracks. Father Jacob is going to ask where their brother Joseph is. So they had to concoct a plan by which it appears he was eaten by some wild beast when in actuality it's just the blood of goat. And when a goat shows up in Genesis, look to see if it's in the context of deception or being sneaky. That's what you have here. Verse 32. They took the ornamented robe back to their father and said, "We found this. Examine it to see whether it is your son's robe." Now, just analyze their words. They don't come right out and say some wild animal ate Joseph. Perhaps they reasoned that they later could say, "Well, we never said Joseph was dead. That's what you, Dad, believed, but we never said that." However, they are obviously deceiving their father to believe such an event took place. You know, we can say a lot in such a few words. We can be very hurtful in just a few words. Note how the brothers describe their brother Joseph in this verse. Again, they tell their father, looking at the verse here, "Examine it to see whether it is your son's robe." Did you catch it? They don't call it Joseph's robe or our brother's robe, but your son's robe. What's that really saying? Sure, it's true that Joseph is Jacob's son, but their words seem to show that they're distancing themselves from Joseph, as if to say he's not one of us. Verse 33. He recognized it and said, "It is my son's robe. Some ferocious animal has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces." What goes around comes around. You ever heard that? Why do I say that here? By use of a goat, Jacob was deceived by his own sons. Does this remind you of any prior story in the book of Genesis involving Jacob and a goat and deception and a parent? How about chapter 27 when, with prodding from his mother Rebekah, Jacob uses goat skin to deceive his father Isaac into getting the blessing from Esau? What goes around comes around. And you add to this what the brothers and what Jacob believed about Joseph's dreams. Again, the two dreams from the previous verses show Joseph in a superior position where they all would be dependent upon him. They are looking to him. Did they believe the dreams were of God? If so, the brothers, by selling Joseph to slave traders, would have been trying to thwart the will of God. They may have thought, if we get rid of Joseph, then the dreams can't come true. And if Jacob believed that the dreams were of God, then his belief that Joseph had died means that he is believing a lie over God's revealed truth. It just makes you wonder what was going through the minds of the brothers and the father, Jacob. Did the brothers really think that they could outmaneuver God? Did Jacob believe a lie over God's revealed truth? And are we ever guilty of such thoughts? Verse 34. Then Jacob tore his clothes, put on sackcloth, and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and daughters came to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. "No," he said, "in mourning will I go down to the grave to my son." So his father wept for him. Here's my last insensitivity to show. Jacob is distraught, believing his son, his favorite son, Joseph, was dead. Of course, that was a lie, but Jacob doesn't know that. But his sons know it. But the insensitivity I see here is them letting their father believe such a horrible lie, all to cover their own tracks. Sure, Jacob played favorites, and I'm not defending that. But still, to let your own father believe that one of his children was mauled to death by a wild beast is just horrible. All because they were jealous. True, they didn't know where Joseph would end up, but they knew he hadn't died. They probably just assumed they would never see him again. Maybe that he'd just become one of many slaves in Egypt, never to be seen or heard from again. But instead of telling their father the truth, they let him believe a horrible lie for over 20 years, that his own son was dead when he really wasn't. How insensitive can one be? But favoritism, hatred, jealousy, they reap dangerous consequences. Just for Bible trivia fun, Jacob has how many children? Well, there are 12 sons. Plus, we know there's the daughter Dinah, right? But verse 35 refers to daughters, plural. Were there other daughters besides Dinah? Perhaps. Does the term daughters refer to granddaughters or daughters-in-law? You can jot down Genesis 46, verse 7 and verse 15, which I would say argues that there were other daughters like Dinah. We just don't have their names. Plus, you would think with the ratio of female to male births that there would be more females than just Dinah. But it's not a reason to start a new church over. Just throwing it out there. All right, I got one more verse to go, verse 36. Meanwhile, the Midianites sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. Again, we ask, are the Midianites the same group as the Ishmaelites? Are they two separate groups? Is one the subset of the other? Go and study it out for yourself. But whatever the case, we see here that Joseph makes it to Egypt, exactly where God wants him. End of story. All live happily ever after, right? Not so fast. Sure, Egypt is where God wants Joseph, but remember, he enters Egypt as a slave. Coming up, he will be falsely accused of attempted rape and will go from slave to prisoner. But before we get to all that, we'll have a seemingly out-of-place chapter to look at, Genesis 38. What do I mean? If this is a series on Joseph, where is Joseph in chapter 38? Spoiler alert, nowhere. Then why is chapter 38 in our Bibles? Lord willing, next time we'll look at that. Well, in summary to today's message, we looked at insensitivity. Three I specifically pointed out, and the application to us is as follows. Number one, eating while their brother Joseph is left to die. You know how easy it is to turn a blind eye to a dying world so that we can feast. Number two, mistreating Joseph for financial gain. Sure, we can easily gravitate towards others because of what we can get out of them, but here I'm looking at where one mistreats another for financial gain, even if it's not a huge gain. Number three, letting Jacob believe a lie so the brothers could cover up their jealousy and evil. In this regard, this shows how sin breeds other sin. And so we see how deceptive insensitivity is. The brothers may have thought that they were being clever with their sin by getting rid of Joseph, by deceiving their father, and yet their own insensitivity to sin was deceiving them into thinking that they could get away with it. And so, as followers of Christ, may we ask that the Spirit show us areas where we might be sensitive to sin. Or I should say, have been insensitive to sin. Claim that forgiveness that has already been purchased by Christ and live a life to the glory of God.